Welcome to Why Should I Care, where I, Shishir Pandey, look to help young people find and follow their dreams while reminding older people that they used to dream too.
If you haven't listened to last week's episode yet, you should definitely check it out. That's episode 16. In the last episode, John Robinson talked about his journey through college and also started getting into some of the things that he did in the corporate world. In this episode, John's going to get into the nitty-gritty details about how to survive in the corporate environment.
The moment that I signed the offer, I started working. So let's just say, they say your start date is a month later. I started working that day. And what did I do? I started setting up interviews. Who are the five people I should talk to? You know, and you know, who should I have lunch with? Who plays golf? I would meet these people, and by the day one, they'd be like, when did you start? Well, I started today. How do you know all these people? So that's a little trick that's worked really well for me in onboarding. And I'll say this, you take charge of your own onboarding process. You say, hey, in my first 100 days, here are the small wins that I want to have. Here are the people that I want to meet. Here are the problems I want to solve. Here's what I want to learn. Here's what I want to know. Here's what I want to become in the first 100 days. Think of yourself no different than a president. In the first 100 days, there's a spotlight on the U.S. president in the first 100 days. There's tons of talk at day 100. Why not be that diligent on your first 100?
So I think that's actually really, really great advice, especially for I've had a lot of entrepreneurship talk on my podcast so far, and I don't necessarily think that this podcast is directed purely to entrepreneurs, and this is really, really great advice for people who want to be very satisfied with their work but don't necessarily want to be their own boss.
Yeah, this philosophy that I've used in corporate for first 100 days has parlayed into entrepreneurship the same way. So whenever I have a new consulting engagement, whenever I invest in a new business, whenever I decide that I just want to help a new business, I share first 100 day tools with them. And I'll give you an example. There's a local restaurant in San Diego that is a block away from my house. I enjoy the restaurant. It just opened up in December of last year, or December, January. And I got to like the people and the owner. And they're brand new, and I want to see them survive. I don't want to see this location go through the third restaurant in the last 5 years. So I figured, why not help by providing some guidance? So every time I go in, I'll ask, hey, what's on your mind this week? What are the problems that are on your mind this week that you want to solve? What is it that you want to know about your business that you don't know right now? I mean, just any inquiry to help someone draw out what it is that would help them succeed. And then putting a frame that says, hey, I want to help you have the best first 100-day start, because most restaurants have a slow, slow start in the first 100. I want to be able to talk to you and help you think through what are the things that you can do to take you from unknown to widely known. And that little conversation is not just entrepreneurship. I'm a brand new person at a job. Is unknown, so widely known is a destination for a brand new employee.
In a good way,
of course, in a good way. The reputation that you want people to know about you, not the ones that you don't.
People underestimate how much their personal brand plays a factor when they're not working for themselves. It means a lot, even in the context of the corporate environment. And you should act accordingly, right?
So. Yeah, and let me talk a little bit about personal branding, because you bring up a strong point. And I'm going to share a few questions that I ask myself. And I have worksheets, so I'm not making these questions up, because I just looked at them and I'm like, yeah, I created, in my years, I created 11 phases of a personal brand. And yeah. I already described you a little bit earlier that said they don't know me at all to they're advocates for me. I mean, they know me and they tell mm-hmm. others about me in a good way. Yeah. So we all start from this place of they don't know me. And one of the questions I ask myself is, you know, are potential customers aware of my personal brand? So let's say for those entrepreneurs out there that are being consultants, it's like, okay, I'm a consultant. I want to go out in the world. I'm unknown. Or if I'm known, how are they aware of me in general? How are they aware of my personal brand? And then do they know what my brand offers? If they know me, do they know what I offer? And then can they place me in the right industry or the right product category, or the right competitive set? Those would be three anchoring questions as you go into, let's say you transition from corporate America and you want to go into private consulting. Those are the first three questions. Those questions still apply for a brand in general, like a company brand. Are customers aware of our company, our brand? Are they aware of what our company brand offers? Can they place us within the same competitive set?
Yep.
So I, you know, as I was saying earlier, there's a part of just getting good at inquiry, writing questions. Continue to write as many questions as you can on any journey that you're on, because there is no perfect plan.
Let's move forward a little bit. You've done your 18 years of corporate work. So where'd you go from there?
Well, one of the last stops of corporate America, I was head of a health insurance carrier marketing for Medicare, and doing really well. Lived in Arizona and worked between Arizona and California, and I found out that my grandmother needed help with her Medicare plan. And not only my grandmother, my aunts as well were aging, and my aunts were aging into the category. And my grandmother was already there, but wanted to do something better with her Medicare plan. Unfortunately, both states were not within our service area. So Illinois and Colorado weren't there. So I'm at a moral dilemma. I'm making gobs of money, and I can't help my family figure out their Medicare choice and connect them to someone that I trusted. So... yet again, the universe brings me another severance package. And this time, I choose to say, I'm going to solve that problem of making it, taking the pain out of finding a health plan for senior citizens. So I go and with not one day's worth of experience in technology, I go and start asking questions. Because what do I need? I need information. I need information aggregated. And I thought at that time, who are the people out there aggregating data very well and making shopping easy? And it was the travel industry. So that's when I said, wait a second, who do I know that works in the travel industry? So then I called a friend of mine. She was in sales for Orbitz, the travel portal. And I asked her, hey, how do you guys aggregate your data? And she's like, no one aggregates their data. They hire travel data aggregators. And then that's when I thought, okay, let me talk to a data aggregator. So I started talking to data aggregators and I said, have you ever aggregated health insurance information? They said, no, but we would love to. And that's where it started from there. I created a software company, which ended up being a travel portal. I mean, not a travel portal, but a health insurance portal, like a search engine. So it was literally a search engine with software. And I did that for about 5 years. And what ended up happening, there was Medicare reform. So Medicare reform took away the revenue model. And I wanted to keep it really pure without advertising revenue. I just wanted it to be a lead generation model. And when the government took away the ability for licensed brokers to purchase leads, then that was it. So that was my first, I would say my first legitimate leap into the entrepreneurship pool. I'd always done entrepreneurship.
That's a pretty big one.
It was a very big one because I funded everything myself. It was hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's when you develop websites for 50 grand, when you develop databases for another 70. It was a very expensive time to create a, in essence, a search engine. And that was 2006.
Yeah. Wow. So that was super early on.
Super early on in 2006, 7, and 8. Yeah, very early. But along the way, and this is, as again, as I was saying to listeners, this path isn't perfect. So along the way, as I am figuring out the data I need, figuring out how to make health insurance information searchable, because that was another thing, not only aggregating it, but make it searchable. So think of taking a telephone book that has never been computer format searchable before and make a computer format searchable, and then take the telephone book from every county in the United States, all being different. So it was a behemoth of a thing to do. And if anything, as I reflect on that, I can smile wider knowing that it was that achievement that mattered more than the financial success, which it didn't end up being successful as I had hoped it to be. But so, keeping going forward, as I'm going through thinking, my grandmother now knows how to pick a plan. My grandmother can now talk to somebody that I trust. And now she has to pick a doctor. Like, oh no, how's she going to pick a doctor? So then in that process,
round two.
So I start talking to doctor's offices and networks. And I stumbled on one particular doctor who was a serial entrepreneur. And I wanted to just get the information of all of his, you know, all the doctors that he was responsible for. And he asked me, I said, what keeps him up at night? And then he told me, and then he said, I really like the way you think. I like what you're doing here. I like the way you think. Is there any way that you could, you know, give me a few hours of your time per month on a consulting basis? And I'd always stayed away from this idea of being a consultant because I never wanted to be a consultant because I believe, because I've hired consultants all my career, and I believe they just didn't have a vested interest. And I don't believe they were designed to tell me the hard truths. So I didn't want to be a consultant with them. But then I started thinking about it. I said, well, wait a second. If I had a magic wand, how would I use it in this situation? So I said, I would want respect from the staff. I would want to have whoever I talk to understand that I'm coming from a good place, and whatever observations, whatever feedback, whatever critiquing that I would share, that it would know that I'm coming from the truth. I'm not saying it to get paid. I'm not saying it to make people mad. I'm not saying it just to say be a yes man. I'm saying it just because I want to be crazy honest. So then I thought, well, wait a second. I don't want to say I'm a consultant. And then I figured out, well, I'd like to say I'm a backup CEO. And I said, that's what I want. I want to be a backup CEO. I want to be the guy that CEOs who want a second set of eyes on their business, and they're the kind of people who want the hard truths. I want to be that guy. So all of a sudden I created backup CEO, which in essence, if you said, what category is it in? Sure. It's in consulting. It's in life coaching. It's in motivational speaking. I mean, it's all of those things. But what it is most, it's I'm in the boat with you. I'm a backup CEO. So I get introduced as a backup CEO. And you know what happens when people introduce you as a backup CEO? You get their attention. You get their attention. So, you know, with all that being said, for those out there that are going into the consulting space, think about a naming convention that will have doors open for you versus them closed. Think about a naming convention that will get you respect versus get you to not get anyone's attention.
Yeah. It's too bad backup CEO is taken now.
All of it's taken. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't realize what first page dominance meant until I do a backup CEO search and I'm all over the place.
Yeah. If you have backupceo.com, yeah, you're coming out
right
first.
Exactly. So let me go on a little bit further, because what I enjoy is, like I said, in fourth grade, I said I wanted to own businesses. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a value. I wanted to contribute. Well, now I have this philosophy that instead of being a CEO for one company, I want to be a backup CEO for 10. I want to influence 10 cultures. I want to put 10 remarkable contributions into the world. Like I have another engagement that I enjoy, and it's a sunglass company in San Diego. A 29-year-old CEO who has we'll just say anywhere between $30 and $50 million a year sunglass company. In the last 4 years, it grew to be that. And I get to be part of this. I get to help shape the culture, shape the minds of the less than 10 people company. And so it's fun when we talk about fit, and we talk about fit in a job, also fit with clients. Who are the kind of clients you want to work with? What are the kind of products you want to work with? So spend some time thinking about that too. Because it matters. It absolutely matters. And your smile, it matters in how you feel about what you're doing. And maybe it might not make you the most money, because I have this philosophy that says, I want to do work that fills my soul. And if it happens to fill my pockets, that'd be nice too. But I put soul in front of pockets. And if you said, what's the biggest shift that you had in the last 20 years, that was it. It went from pockets. Mm-hmm. It went from filling my pockets to filling my soul first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the transition that I'm in right now is going. So I went from filling my pockets to filling my soul. And now I'm struggling with the pockets a little bit, but I think it'll sort itself out within the next couple of years. I just wanted to highlight, actually, going back in your story, it's really intriguing to me that you went through that entire 18 years of corporate. Mm-hmm. And to me, those 18 years are now making it easy for you to select your clients instead of being selected by them the way that you were being. You were selecting your companies instead of being selected by them.
Yeah.
And then going forward to your foray into the tech world, again, you've built skills related to, one, the tech world, and more importantly, the business world, because you spent time building two businesses. Mm-hmm. And that experience is invaluable, and that's what makes you qualified to be the backup CEO.
Yeah, and I'm going to add a couple other ways to hack experience. And maybe I'm not using the word hack correctly, but in my mind, I'm trying to figure out how to make things easier for entrepreneurs to get experience. Do you have to start a company in order to be an impact to lots of people? No, you don't. Like, yes, I started two companies, but I've impacted hundreds. And how have I impacted hundreds of companies? I've volunteered my time in accelerator groups. So at one time for a year, I was a program manager for 100 entrepreneurs with revenues between $100 and $1 million. So I watched a year's worth of decisions. I influenced a year's worth of decisions, influenced a year's worth of recovery from setbacks. So being in the trenches, being on the battlefield with a bunch of fellow entrepreneurs, it's almost the same experience. And a lot of people say, no, it's not, because you're not writing a check. So what? I'm influencing a check to be written. So that's just as big a deal. For somebody that says, I'm not going to write this check to hire this person, and then by the end of a call with me, they say, you know what? I'm glad you talked to you, because now it's an investment. I'm going to do it. I might as well have signed the check. But people say, no, you don't start companies. So there's a lot of ways out there to get experience that most people believe it's experience of starting your own company, when it's in actuality just doing the work within a company.
Yeah. And the other thing is, it like doesn't even have to be within the confines of the job. Just like you said, with the volunteering right now, for me, that looks like starting Facebook groups and being active on LinkedIn and making connections and helping people without expecting anything in return. And I think that's a theme with you as well. Going back to the restaurant example, you were talking about how you helped this restaurant just because you wanted it to be successful. You liked it, right? So it's not necessarily about, oh, how do I find gain for myself in this? You're the most genuine when you're doing things because you care.
I like that you tease that out, because I used to be in charge at Citibank. I was in charge of all the community reinvestment for all of the nation. And that included ethnic marketing of Hispanic, Asian, and African American. And what just showed up for me when you said that, it's a form of community reinvestment. It's the community that I'm in, and I'm reinvesting in it because I don't want to see a boarded up restaurant. Imagine what a world would be if some of the talent that's a block away could just help that entrepreneur. If it's a bookkeeper, if it's an accountant, if it's someone that has idle time for sales or whatever it is, a marketer, even an intern. I mean, I still look at this for those that that are trying to figure out, how do I get experience when I don't have it? Volunteer. If you are trying to be a marketer and you're, you know, in undergrad or grad or whatever age you are, and you want to get into marketing, volunteer. Say, hey, can I help you with your Facebook ads? Can I help you with your printing of this or whatever it is? And donate your time. That will always be experience on your resume. It will be a bullet point the moment that you do it. And that's been something that I've had more engagements that I've volunteered my time first, and then it ended up being lucrative later.
Yeah. You're mirroring a lot of the things that I do as well. It's I took a bit of a different approach, because I started working on different projects, and it wasn't necessarily volunteering, but it was, hey, look, for the past year and a half, sure, I haven't been employed, but look at all the things that I've accomplished, and look at the results. And it doesn't matter what capacity those results come in. It matters that they're there, right?
Yeah, it does. And adding to that, if you find yourself unemployed unexpectedly, you have 168 hours in a week. 168. Whenever I ask the question, how many hours in a week, most people say 40, 50. No, 7 times 24 is 168 hours. Dedicate 10 of those 168 hours. Think of it as money. You had $168 at the beginning of every week. You have to use all of it. Use $10 of that, 168, and volunteer. Go somewhere, volunteer to get actual application, work experience. And then use another 10 hours to find a job, another $10 to whatever. But be mindful of, I'm going to keep building my resume even though I'm not employed.
unemployed time doesn't have to be unproductive.
Not at all.
With all of the experience that you have now and all of the knowledge that you've accrued, if you were to be transported back into your 10-year-old grade 5 body, what would you want to be when you grew up?
The same thing. The same thing. The same thing. And then if you said, well, what would you want to know? What would you want somebody to tell you about that before you started?
Mm-hmm.
I would want them to tell me that when people think that you're crazy, embrace it and keep doing what you're doing. Because mm-hmm. that's I've learned that along the way. On a side note, after all of this, you know, all of these accolades and this power and this prestige and all these things I've talked about, in 2012, I began to give it all away. And by 2014, I had gotten rid of $1.3 million in debt to almost nothing and gave all my possessions away and started over. And that's hence why I'm in San Diego right now, because I control, alt, deleted my entire life. And I say that because as I was giving away most of my things in my million-dollar house in Scottsdale, I had a 70-year-old guy come in with his wife, and they were just perusing to look at what things I had in the house. And he pulled me aside and said, what are you doing? And I told him, I'm unplugging. You know, I am starting over. This is not the life I want. I want something different. Mm-hmm. And he said, I coach CEOs that are my age right now. And if they did what you're doing at age 43, 44, they would have extended their life by 20 years. He says, if anybody tells you you're crazy, you're on to something. And it was like an mm-hmm. angel that came out of anywhere, because I thought I was going crazy. My family thought I was going crazy, that I could start all over. Imagine playing Monopoly and you're winning and you're doing really, really good. And you say, I'm putting all of this money back and I'm going to go play Trouble or Sorry or any other game other than Monopoly. I'm going to go play a new game now. That mm-hmm. is exactly what it felt like. And as I'm saying, that's what I would want somebody to tell me. It's like, hey, if you people say you're crazy, then you're on to something.
Yeah. Actually, irrelevant conversation, but you sparked it in me. It's actually something that I tell a lot of people, but I've never shared with my audience, is my thoughts on what I believe a successful company and a successful tech company will, like, the clearest indicator of that. So throughout the time that I've been evaluating, because I like to predict things, companies that we've sort of adopted over the years, I've realized that whenever I think, well, that's crazy about a company, there's a very high chance that they're going to be extremely successful. So for example, when Snapchat came out, well, that's crazy. That's dumb. Like, why would you do that? We already have Facebook. You don't need this, right? We already have Instagram. We don't need this. And sure enough, it was successful.
Yeah.
And like, especially in the social media game, like, I think that applies, because I'm going to make a prediction here and it might come to bite me in the ass, but I'm not sure if you're familiar with Vero.
No, I'm not.
Okay. Vero is a new social media platform that is basically like a mishmash of Instagram, Facebook, and I guess Twitter, a little bit of everything. And their whole claim to fame is that they don't use an algorithm to show you what people are posting. So you get to see everything. So my prediction is that Vero is not going to succeed. The reason being is that nobody said it was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it was crazy because it's exactly the same as everything else that came before it. And I didn't initially think it was crazy. And in my experience, if it's going to succeed, my first reaction should always be, this is crazy.
Yeah. Exactly.
So let's see if I actually publish that or not. But
okay.
Got to put my money where my mouth is.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. With all that, I don't have any further questions for you. Do you have anywhere you would like to direct my audience to get in touch with you, to talk to you if they would like to use your services as a backup CEO, whatever you want to share?
Here's what I'd love to share. I want the world to know that I am here to share my experiences, my luck, my failures, and my connections. And how you can connect to me is through Twitter at Backup CEO. Mm-hmm. You can connect with me on Facebook at Backup CEO. You can connect with me via email, and I'll put it out there. John, J-O-H-N, at backupceo.com. And when I say you can reach out to me, I am fueled. I thrive on helping. If you have a question and you feel stuck, whatever the decision is. And I mean, I'm a guy, while we talked about entrepreneurship, I really want to be known for the guy who helps people live easier lives, love deeper, have work that they really are passionate about, and have as much fun as possible. So live, love, work, and play. So if you have any questions on any of that, reach out.
Awesome. And I guess that's sort of your entire message.
Yeah.
And I really love how that sort of came into a nice little package there. So thanks a lot for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Why Should I Care? You can find us on Instagram at Building Intrigue, Facebook.com/Building Intrigue, or you can email me directly at Shashir@buildingintrigue.com.